This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, in the week when Martin O'Neill, Paolo Di Canio, Gus Poyet, Dick Advocaat, Sam Allardyce, David Moyes, Simon Grayson, Chris Coleman, Jack Ross, and Phil Parkinson were joined by Lee Johnson on a list of managers who've departed from the Stadium of Light in the past 10 years. Johnson's exit came 24 hours after a chaotic 6-0 defeat at Bolton Wanderers and a few weeks after he was named Skybet League One Manager of the Month for December. And on this week's episode, the movement of players is the focus of our attention. And nowhere was there more activity as the transfer window closed than at Skybet Championship promotion hopefuls Bournemouth, who made five new signings. We'll meet one of them.
I had a conversation with the manager and it just felt like a really good fit.
And we'll go head to head with a Skybet League Two manager for so long a one club man, now a football nomad.
It is different, of course, when you've been somewhere for so long. But actually, it's just making sure that you focus on the right things.
It's the official EFL podcast. So lots of eye-catching EFL transfer activity on deadline day. In the Skybet Championship, Fulham signed the Liverpool and Wales fullback Neco Williams on loan. In Skybet League One, Sunderland re-signed 39-year-old free agent Jermaine Defoe. And in Skybet League Two, Newcastle United midfielder Matty Longstaff, who just returned from one loan spell with Aberdeen, will spend the rest of this season at Mansfield Town. Nowhere, though, were the lights on until the early hours later than at Bournemouth. In the space of a few hours, they signed midfielder Sariki Dembele from Peterborough and striker Kiefer Moore from Cardiff City on permanent deals. And they loaned in goalkeeper Freddie Woodman from Newcastle, defender Nathaniel Phillips from Liverpool, and from Norwich City, midfielder Todd Cantwell. Now, have I got this right? I just want to get the deal right. Is this with an option to buy? So are you sitting there ready to sign up permanently in the summer, do you think, Todd?
I think for me, the most important thing for me at the moment is to get back playing, get some games under my belt, get my form going and ultimately help Bournemouth get promoted. You know, that's why I'm here. And if we can do that by winning the title, that's an extra bonus.
Yeah, but I'm a bit confused because I think Bournemouth have an option, but also Norwich City have an option on another contract with you, do they not? So I'm just trying to clarify exactly what the sort of detail is there, as best you can tell me.
For my clarity, I think, you know, without avoiding your question too much, for me, you know, the conversations I've had and, you know, you have a team that works around you as a player to sort out those bits. For me, it was just to come here to get games, to play and enjoy myself.
You've been trained well. Very well answered, mate. Very well answered. I was going to say it must be very weird when, you know, obviously signed when you were 10 from hometown, Durham Town, and all the way through the academy to be leaving. But of course, you did have that loan spell, didn't you, when you went off to Holland to Fortuna Sittard back, you know, a couple of years ago. So is it not quite such a novelty to be sort of pushed into a completely different club for you?
Yeah, no, it's not too bad. I've done that, previously. I've also had to meet up with multiple different England camps. And, you know, I think when you're a footballer, you kind of just get used to the idea of, you know, merging in with other footballers. And, I think, to be fair, from the first couple of days I've been here, the lads have been brilliant. The staff have been brilliant. It feels like a little bit of a home from home type feel to the place as well. I'm just really, really excited to get going starting on Sunday.
It must be a little bit like first day at school, is it? Because obviously the cluster of the squad have been together. A couple of signings beforehand, James Hill and Ethan Laird. And then you five sort of all tumbling in on the last day of the window. Are you all kind of going round doing introductory handshakes and telling each other about each other? Is this some sort of bonding exercise?
Yeah. I think, like I say, you know, the boys have been very welcoming, which has obviously been very helpful. Most people have come and introduced themselves to myself, so I haven't had to go around and, you know, do that part. But, you know, like I say, I think, you know, once you're here to do a job. I think, you know, obviously everyone in football kind of knows other players, and I think they obviously knew, when I was coming in. They're not surprised by it. But no, it's been really good. I've really enjoyed my first couple of days.
Yeah, but is it quite daunting, you know, when you step out on the training field and you think, right, I've played against this guy, But just for that first half an hour, you're kind of, right, I better get all my touches crisp. I better be fastest in the sprints near the beginning, just to kind of set a marker for the group.
100%. I think, you know, when you come into a new club, you've got a new opportunity to kind of reset your standards and people's opinion of you, you know, from what they think externally to then they get the chance to see it internally. And I think, you know, as a pride-worthy person, as someone that, you know, wants only good to be spoken about me, it's important for me that I went in and I kind of, you know, showed people what I am about. And, you know, not just that in terms of the football, because, you know, if you haven't played football for a while, you can be a little bit rusty. But as a person, you know, I always think that being who you are and being the best version of you is also an important factor. And, you know, I think I'm going to get on with the lads here very well. Obviously, I know a couple before I came, so no, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I know when Neil Adams sort of fixed the Dutch move for you, he talked about taking you out of your comfort zone because you had been at Norwich for a long time, and you obviously benefited from that, came back and, you know, plugged that hole that James Maddison had left, et cetera, et cetera. Do you feel, though, like you're coming out of your comfort zone now, or does it feel quite natural as we speak to you 48 hours after arriving?
No, do you know what? It did, but, you know, I think in certain points of your career, I think sometimes it's important to, like you just said, you know, come out of your comfort zone, have fresh targets, have fresh views, and, you know, re-motivate yourself to restart, really. It's like a bit of a restart button. Obviously, a fantastic club like Bournemouth, the manager, you know, the way they want to play seemed like a real real good fit for me. So, yeah, no, I'm enjoying the challenge so far.
How do you look at your last two or three seasons at Norwich? How do you look back on them?
I think they've been really successful. Obviously, we've had two title-winning championship seasons. We've obviously had the unlucky relegation, which, you know, no one really wants to be a part of at any football club. That wasn't very nice. But then obviously feeling the satisfaction of being able to react to that and put the club back, you know, where, you know, us as a team collectively took the club to then react and do it the way we did. I think it can only be deemed as a successful time for me at Norwich. And obviously the team are in the Premier League now, just out of the relegation zone, and hopefully they stay out of it.
Do you think, I mean, apart from your ability as a talented young footballer, do you think that's part of the attraction from Scott's point of view, that you do know what it is like to be in a championship promotion winning squad? You've done it twice.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you need as many players that have had that exposure as possible. Obviously, the way that we want to play here is not too dissimilar to the way that we played, or I played under Daniel Farker in the Championship, which, you know, evidently was very successful. I know, obviously, Bournemouth started very well and they've had a little bit of a tough spell. But, you know, in the Championship, it's crucially important to just put back-to-back results because there's a lot of tough fixtures, a lot of tough games. And a lot of good teams really spread out. So, you know, if you can go back to back with some wins, I think that's where you really start to notice the difference in the table.
Yeah, it's almost like the classic promotion teams of the last sort of decade and a half I've been covering the Championship. They're almost, when you get in that groove and you experienced it, you're almost like a machine, are you not? You just keep sort of like the tracks on a sort of digger moving towards the hole they want to dig. It's almost mechanical with rhythm.
Oh, 100%. I think the confidence you get from beating teams, and there is some very tough away fixtures. So, you know, getting the 3 points and getting back on the road, like you said there, you know, you build up a confidence. The next game can't come quick enough. And luckily enough, in the Championship, they do come pretty quick. So, you know, you just go straight into the next one and, yeah, try and string them together.
When did you know you're on the move, and when did you know it was going to be Bournemouth? Because I read Olympiacos, I read Granada. There was rumours of a couple of Premier League clubs being in for you. But when did you know the deal was going to happen?
I think, respectfully, I knew a while ago. I think for whatever reason, you know, things didn't materialise the way I'd planned this season. And that's just honest. You know, and I found myself in this position. But as a footballer, you have to react to these things. You know, you can't sit there, you can't rest on it. I think everyone's aware of football careers. You know, every ex-player I've ever spoken to says absolutely flies by. And, you know, you've got so many players from so many different places around the world that, you know, it's just a fresh batch every time the older bunch kind of fizzle out. So for me, the most important thing in my career is playing football. To answer your question about kind of when and how, there was very much a strong possibility that I'd be going abroad for the majority of the window. There was interest from Premier League clubs. You know, nothing materialised in the sense that, you know, anything was on the table ready to go. But as everyone knows in England, deadline day becomes a very sort of interesting day, which I've obviously watched as a kid and then obviously felt this time. So Bournemouth was pretty late in the window. I had a conversation with the manager here. And to be honest, it felt like a really easy decision after that conversation. It wasn't something that I had planned for by any means. But listening to the manager, knowing the manager, knowing what the manager did as a player, and like I say, everything he spoke to me on the phone just completely concreted my mind that this was the right move for me at this stage of my career. And, you know, there's a goal here, which is to go up. And if we can do it winning the title, then, you know, it's the extra bonus. And that's definitely something I want. You know, I want to win. It kills me to lose. So I think it just felt like a really good fit.
Because of your experiences and obviously the back end of Daniel Farke's tenure at Norwich, was that synergy with the manager really important to you, that you felt as though you were in each other's heads and knew what each other was all about?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the gaffer here knew exactly what it was that I would do and what I would bring. And for me, you know, the most important thing is that the manager sees you in that mould. You know, there's no surprises, obviously, with what I bring. You know, everything that I think are my best attributes, they already knew. So, you know, I think when the manager speaks so sincerely, and, you know, you buy into it almost instantly, then you know it's the right thing for you to do, which, you know, did become apparent very quickly for me that, you know, if we could get something sorted and something done, then this would be the best option.
Yeah, he's a fascinating character, isn't he, Scott Parker? Having spent a bit of time with him, he's obviously quite intense in many respects, yet relaxed in others, seems to know exactly what he wants, but he's got that air of humbleness and vulnerability about him as well. He's a proper rounded human being, it feels like to me, Todd.
Yeah, no, I'd echo that. I mean, like I say, I've only been here 2 days, so you know, I don't want to go into too much, but for me, you know, he seems everything a player would want in a manager. Honest, you know, respectful, you know, everything that you would want in a manager as a player. I feel like that's exactly what he brings. Obviously, like I say, I know his football career. I think most people obviously do. And like you said, you know, as well, you know, the air that he brings, you know, he does have, you know, a presence, which I think is really important as a manager, as it is a player. You know, it is a business and an industry where, you know, you have to be sure about what it is that you can bring and you can do. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to the time I've got, you know, with the manager, with all of the coaching staff and all of the players.
The notion of talking late to Bournemouth, I mean, are we talking Saturday? Are we talking Sunday? Are we talking Monday morning? You woke up and did not know where you were going to be sleeping that night. Literally like that.
Yeah, I found out on Saturday that it was something that could potentially happen. And like I say, you know, I very, very soonly followed by a conversation with the manager. And yeah, from there, it materialised enough for me to make my way down on the Monday. And then, yeah, we got the paperwork done pretty late.
It's a profession like very few others, isn't it? You must have mates and maybe swap jobs and they've got 2 months to hand in their notice, then move on to the job, and then they know they're going to be going in, and then they'll have 6 months to reacclimatise and get used to. I mean, you guys don't at all, do you? It is literally kick a ball in on one field one day for one club, and a week later you're doing it for somebody completely different.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's something as a footballer you kind of know. Obviously, like you said, it is a little bit more dramatic than that because, yeah, I mean, most jobs you hand in your notice, you've got a month to kind of look forward or, you know, prepare type. You know, it was very much pack a suitcase and, you know, let's see if we can get something sorted. Like I say, I'm just happy it did. You know, I'm thankful to both parties for being able to let this materialise and let it be the best thing for my career moving forward or in the immediate future, which is, you know, as a footballer, it's all you can really plan for. There's a lot of different bits and pieces that can go the way you didn't want them to in football. But, you know, I think while you're in the present, you've got to live in it and you've got to just try and get as many games out yourself as possible.
Listen, you want to move on. I don't see any point in raking over some of the previous embers, but do you feel you've got something to prove, maybe something to prove to a previous manager, previous managers, to supporters?
Honestly, no, I don't. I know what it is that I bring. And respectfully, outside noise to me has just become a blur. So, you know, if the direct communication and bits and pieces I have directly with the club are not right, one, it stays internal anyway. And two, you know what you believe is right and wrong and the truth and whatever. So for me, the most important thing I've always said to myself as a footballer, I'll always be honest with myself. So I'll always be self-critical. And I'll always, you know, stay true to myself and remain the person that I want to be. I've done that throughout my process. Like I say, things haven't gone as planned. I think most people probably realise that it's not something that will shock everyone. But yeah, I think for me, it's just getting back to playing, getting back to providing what I want to provide for my teammates. And I'm desperate to get another title. You know, that you're not here to not want to win games. You're not at a club like Bournemouth if you don't want to try and clinch the title. So for me, that's my sole aim.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Have you got something to prove to yourself? You're still a young fella. You've obviously had a sniff of England under-21s and that involvement. Are you looking to click and go again within yourself?
Yeah, 100%. You know, as a footballer, you set ambitions, you set targets for yourself. I have done that, as probably every single player you know has done that. You know, I've got ambitions and desires to get to the highest level I can. But you can't get to that level through words. You have to get to that level through action. So for me, it's about, like I say, bringing what I know I can bring what the club believe I can bring. And if it all links together and, you know, the team and, you know, everything goes well, then I think that results in winning the league or, you know, definitely going up. So, you know, that's the sole aim at the moment. And, you know, personally, I want to contribute. But if you're in the team that's winning, you're contributing. So, you know, I don't get too caught up on statistics, but like you said, you know, I have had a taste of kind of the levels and, you know, a snippet maybe of where it is that I want to get to. And yeah, I'm very hungry to get back to that level. I'm very hungry to push past that level. I don't believe that anyone has seen the best of me yet. I think I'm maturing off the pitch as well on the pitch. And yeah, I think for me, it's a consistent run of games now, from now to the end of the season, showing people exactly what it is I bring. And hopefully leave all question marks behind.
Do you know where he's going to play you?
I've got an idea, but that would be telling.
Okay, thanks for that. Well, that's it's a good job. I wasn't looking for that answer to fill the last 3 minutes of the interview.
Yeah, I'm pretty early to get that out of me.
Oh, okay, fine. No, but you're versatile. I always think of you as a sort of right-footed left-side midfielder, but maybe, well, let's just wait and see when you go out on the pitch for the first time.
Exactly.
Listen, I was reading Neil Blake, the chief executive's sort of statement. We've signed five excellent players who add significant quality to our squad, all those coming in fit perfectly into the profile of the players we're looking for. I've no doubt they'll all hit the ground running. I mean, there's no grey areas there, Todd, is there? You know exactly what the club are expecting you guys to do.
Yeah, and that's good as well. You know, to have a club that believe in you as much as Bournemouth, you know, have to all us five signings, really. To get things done in football is sometimes easier to be said than done. There's so many bits and pieces that have to all line up. And, you know, we can only, as players, you know, just show our thanks to that by our performances. So, you know, I think we've all trained for the first couple of days. You probably wouldn't be able to tell. We haven't been training with them for a while. So, yeah, no, I think we're all probably equally as excited just to hit the ground running.
Couple of final questions. Your sort of I'm a celebrity style gesture towards the video camera on your unveiling. You went with a kind of finger, not in a rude way, obviously, but you went with a kind of finger. What was around your finger, first of all? Was there anything significant in that? Or was that just a ring you happened to wear on that finger?
No. That's just a ring. The motion behind what I'm doing can be deemed in multiple ways. But the way I want it to be deemed is kind of, they asked me to do like a celebration type So I hit with like the reverse L, which is an L one way to some people and an L the other way. So that in modern terms is kind of like you haven't won, you catch the L instead of the W, which would obviously be the win. So there's a little bit behind it, but you know, I've got a score for that to come out, otherwise it wouldn't make sense.
You've explained it to me absolutely perfectly, and you've just made me realise there's far more goes into all the different aspects of being a footballer.
It wasn't just a wave of the finger.
And the final question is, I know you left in a hurry, have you got enough vests, pants and socks packed for you, or are you going to have to discover where the local Marks out of town is?
No, yeah, I packed for enough time. You know, we hopefully will have a couple of days at some point where I can nip home and get my final pieces. But yeah, no, I've got enough for now for sure.
Brilliant stuff. It's been an absolute pleasure. Good luck to you, all the other new boys, and to Bournemouth for the rest of the season. Thanks for talking to us on the official EFL podcast, Todd.
Thank you very much. No problem. My pleasure.
Another big managerial change this week has come at the Hawthorns, where Valerie and Ishmael's 12 wins in 31 games in charge of West Bromwich Albion have led to his early departure. He faced criticism throughout his 7.5 months with them about his style of play and had lost 4 of his last 6 games in the league. The club's Chinese investment group owners, who took over in September 2016, are now seeking their 8th head coach since they took charge. On the field in the Sky Bet Championship, we should send our congratulations to Billy Sharp. His 54th minute goal in Sheffield United's win at Peterborough United last weekend takes him to 122 goals in the division and past David Nugent's tally to make him the competition's all-time top scorer. And Billy Sharp, Sheffield United are in action this Friday night away at Birmingham. Only 3 fixtures on Saturday because of FA Cup commitments, but they do include in the late kickoff second place Blackburn's trip to Swansea. There's a full midweek fixture list. Fulham, the leaders, Tuesday night opened up a 5-point gap, actually, at the top end to 10 Millwall. The bottom club, Barnsley, just 2 league wins all season, travel to Luton. And then on Wednesday, Blackburn at home to Forest. Rare defeat for them at Cardiff last weekend, but still just 2 points off the playoffs. Bournemouth, potentially with those 5 new players all involved, are at home to Birmingham. QPR against Middlesbrough's 4th v 6th, and managerless as we record this week's episode of the official EFL podcast, West Brom travel to Sheffield United.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Into Sky Bet League One, where the appalling abuse of Adebayo Akinfenwa by opposition fans in Wycombe Wanderers' home defeat to MK Dons was one of multiple incidents of inappropriate and reckless crowd behaviour last weekend. The EFL have issued a statement and say any form of antisocial behaviour is unacceptable. And whilst these instances only represent a very small section of people attending matches, the mindless few who choose to behave in this way are only demonstrating a complete lack of respect for the clubs they claim to support. On a more positive note, it was a winning start for Neil Harris, who took over at Gillingham from caretaker Steve Lavelle in the aftermath of their 7-2 home defeat to Oxford United last weekend. The former Millwall and Cardiff City manager subsequently led them to their first league win in 15 matches over fellow strugglers Craigsandra in midweek. It is the 3rd club that Harris has played for and then managed. And Gillingham's trip to Ipswich Town is one of 9 Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming Saturday. 4th place MK Dons entertain Lincoln City. 6th place Oxford United are at home to Portsmouth. Rotherham have gone top again after their 5-0 win at Doncaster Rovers in midweek. They entertain Accrington, if my memory serves me right, ended their long unbeaten run in the reverse fixture on Boxing Day. And 3rd place Sunderland are at home to Doncaster. There's a full midweek programme as well. Into Sky Bet League 2, and for a very long time, a conversation with Paul Tisdale involved a mazy dribble down to the southwest to pore over the latest twists and turns of one of the modern football era's longest managerial tenures. But since leaving behind his 12 seasons at Exeter City in 2018, including their unforgettable successive promotions from the National League to Sky Bet League 1, he's now at his 3rd club. And so far, far so good for Stevenage under him, who have won three of the last six to pull 12 points clear of the relegation zone. And I guess my first question I've been itching to ask you for quite some time now, Paul, is do you have any regrets in leaving Exeter City when you did?
It's not a topic I discuss or think about. I've never had a career plan in my professional coaching career. I never wanted to be a coach in the first place, so I stumbled into it, and I've made sure right from the start that I've done it for certain, and I've made my choices for certain reasons, and it's not been an adventure in just taking the next job to get the bigger salary or get to a club that provides me with a bigger budget for players or whatever it might be, or a higher league. It's just been, I've just made my choices based on relationships, purpose to, or alignment to the purpose of the club that I'm working with, working for. And so then when I look back on it, I know I've made all my decisions for the right reasons, all the reasons that I hold dear and the ones that I've focused on. So you just have to march on, don't you? You march on, you make your decision for the right reason. And yes, you can easily have a debate in your own mind if this and if that, but what's the point? And along the way, you meet some terrific people, and actually without the choices you've made, those people wouldn't exist in your life. You wouldn't have made those connections, had those collaborations. And that's the special bit. It's all those connections you make.
So to that end as well, you've got no regrets about not leaving Exeter early when clearly there were some connections to higher division clubs and how your career path might have turned out as a result of those decisions?
Gosh, who would have, I mean, who knows? I mean, I may have taken one of those early opportunities and I may not now be doing something completely different with my life. So I enjoy my life. I enjoy the building of a team and creating an environment for development and performance. I enjoy seeing players develop and improve and creating something that on a Saturday I can see the fruition and the manifestation of that craft and that effort. So I enjoy all that stuff. It all would be different if I'd made choices along the way. So it is a bit of a what if conversation. You make your decisions for the right reasons. As long as you know your purpose, as long as you know what is the priority to you, I know mine.
Yeah. There is a book, I read it in the summer. It's called The Midnight Library, and I've momentarily forgotten the author, so I hope producer Dave can scurry off and tell me in my ear who the author was and look it up for me. But the basic premise is we think if we'd made a decision that life would have turned out in a certain way, but of course with every single one of the 35,000 conscious decisions we make every single day, there is a consequence along the line. It doesn't mean we hang on to all those decisions we're happy with, because some of those opportunities, as you just said, may never have happened. What a deep and philosophical way to
absolutely
start
how,
our
how
chat
do we
today.
Get into this? And I have had people say to me that was a good choice, or that was a poor choice, but mainly that was a good choice, fortunately. And my normal response to that was I made it a good choice. And you have to have that positive, bullish mentality, especially in professional sport, especially when you're leading other people and you're the manager, the head coach, the leader of a group. We make it a good choice. This is the choice we've made. These are the things I can affect and control now, and I will make it a good choice. And that's how you have to, that's how you have to approach every day.
Is there a big difference in the way you operate between being at a place where your feet are so entrenched under the table like they were at Exeter v going into somewhere where you have no roots established at all and have to start to grow them?
Well, it feels different. You know, you have a different depth of connection and relationship, of course. It's a magnified, amplified example of business, I suppose, going into a football club, because what you can affect in 6 weeks, what you get through in 6 weeks, probably takes in a corporate environment 2 years to get through, because you've got so many opportunities to affect the people around you and judge them, judging being the game, the performance. So you get such a heightened period of development, improvement, whatever you want to call it. So that's really your focus when you're going, and that never changes actually. When you've been somewhere for 12 years or 12 weeks, it's still the same thing. You look to the next game, the next couple of weeks. You constantly have to improve, influence the environment around you. It is different, of course, when you've been somewhere for so long, but actually it's just making sure that you focus on the right things, that you're forever balancing the short term and the long term. And that might sound really strange, but I'm not thinking much differently now, having been at Stevenage for 10 weeks, than I did when I was at Exeter for 10 years. You are still constantly balancing the 100 decisions I have to make today, because the whole environment works to your beat as a manager, as the head coach. It works to your beat. It's hard to explain to people, a football environment, you come in, it's not like people can get on with their day. They're not self-starters. They don't have a desk and this is what I've got to get through and I've got a project I'm on. They come in every day and they wait for me to say go. And I will then delegate to the sports science team, to the medical team, whatever it might be, about how we're going to run our day. And you go through a series of operations. But essentially it works to my beat and everyone has to start to that beat. So you have to make huge decisions daily, and you're looking to make hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sensible decisions constantly, not looking for anything clever in order for this to work. And at the same time, you're forever looking at the long term to develop. And when I was at Exeter for 10 years, those decisions, those thoughts are no different than they are today at Stevenage, having been here for only 10 weeks.
Albeit, isn't management so much more short term now when you look at events, say at Sunderland this week, where the manager gets manager of the month 1 month and then one bad result seemingly has been the reason that he's gone. I mean, do you think it's possible to do what you did at Exeter going in 2000? Was it 2006, wasn't it? It was 12 years, wasn't it? Yeah, it was 2006. Yeah. You've said 10 years a couple of times, which has made me think my research was wrong.
No, I was talking about, I was just putting myself back to that moment. It was 12 years.
Yeah. Could you do it again? Do you think it's still possible to find the right environment where a manager will be able to stay at a club for that length of time? Or do you think the landscape is vastly different to 2006 when you started it?
It has changed, but I think it's about finding the fit. Lots of good managers out there, lots of good clubs. Putting them together is... That's the alchemy. That's the bit that you get those things aligned and you've got a real chance. But then, even then, it's an extreme set of circumstances which keeps someone and a group of people together for a long time. And that's chance. It's circumstantial. It's, you know, people would say to me at Exeter along that time, of course, everyone's disappointed when you lose the game or you don't have a successful season. And I'd say, look, if we won every game at Exeter, and I'm here for 12 years, we're going to win the Champions League. And that's not possible. We're not going to win the Champions League. So you cannot expect us to win every game. So it's a very transitory business because people think so short term. But that being said, as the head coach or the manager, and let's use the term manager, because that's how I think. Although I do all the coaching, it's my thing. I'm still the manager. When it comes to, is this going to work long term? It's all about my relationship with the owner, the chairman. And it's not, I don't think, if for it to work long term, it shouldn't be I am working for that person, I am working with that person. You have to be in a position where you feel totally supported and trusted and you can challenge each other. And okay, we talk about support being financial, but the support really is someone who allows you to make the decisions and you are confident in making those decisions. If you get that and you get a bit of financial support, great. But it's all about that. I think it's that relationship. And that's the first thing when I went to Stephen, and my experience of the last 3 or 4 years, the most important thing of all was how could I cultivate that relationship or find out where that relationship sat immediately before any other relationship in the club.
Because I don't want to betray a private social conversation we had before Christmas, but I think there were bits of that where I wondered if you would go back in, where you certainly indicated to me the circumstances would have to be absolutely right for you to do so. And you obviously feel you found it at Stevenage.
Yeah, you go into every conversation with an open mind. I mean, in terms of me deciding to them just to decide to be interested in a conversation with me, and then the conversation that develops in order for that to turn into a yes and let's do it. The transactional part of the conversation is quite short. Okay, there's a contract, and then you look through all the what ifs, and you probably agree on the contract in about 5 minutes, and then spend about 5 days discussing all the what ifs. That's a contract in football. You know, where is this going to go wrong? And everyone thinks about what if, and you go through that and go through that. But the transactional part of the conversation was short. But then the conversation that lasts for 4 or 5 days really is about how is this going to work, and you start to feel like, yeah, I can work with this person. And it's like a game of tennis, you know, these conversations in football, and lots of time I've had conversations with owners, chief executives, chairman along the way, and you have a conversation and you're a football person, you deal in football, you deal in human nature, you deal in performance, and so many times the person at the other end is not intuitive about the product. They have got no intuition whatsoever about what happens on that football pitch. They look at it in a very linear, two-dimensional. They can see success, what it looks like. They don't understand how you get it. They don't understand human nature. And you have a conversation. It's like a game of tennis. You say something and you expect something back, coming back over the net. And it comes back completely different what you're expecting. And you say something again and it comes back different. And that's what football conversations are like. And then every now and then you speak to someone and you say something and it comes back exactly like you're expecting it to. And you put something back and you build a conversation. And then over time, you realize that person's intuitive about what happens on a football pitch. And you know what? It's not. And when I've been doing this now for almost 25 years, I started with a romantic view of how I wanted my teams to play, off the back of how I wanted to play as a player. And you go through that process. Then you get a light bulb moment when you realize that it's about business. It's about scoring more goals than the opposition. And it's about practicalities. And you work through that process. And you go through this long process. And then you suddenly realize it's a game of rock, paper, scissors. My job on a Saturday is rock, paper, scissors. And it's that. No, you can only get to that when you've done it for 20 odd years. But actually what matters is human decisions. It's optimizing personalities. It's finding a group of people that can be competitive together and to spark those competitive juices and give them a framework. It's not that. There's no magic key to winning football matches. There's no magic key. If there was one magic key, everybody would play the same way. And over a period of time, it comes down to human nature. It comes down to a feel. It's all those team topics we talk about. And the technical part of it, it's rock, paper, scissors. But you can only get to that when you've done it for 25 years and you've gone through all those processes. But really, it comes down to people. So you need to find an owner that understands that I'm a manager and I don't have a joystick and I'm not playing FIFA. That's not my job. You know, there's no one way of winning.
But rock, paper, scissors is having to make a whole raft and series of decisions. And there's a chance in that, whether I go rock and you rap with paper or whether I go scissors and cut your paper. Is that what you're saying? You jousting with your counterpart.
Yeah, I guess I'm talking about match day. You turn up, you're playing against the opposition. Let's assume we're all in the same league, roughly. The level of competency between players is roughly the same. We've all got sports science people. We all know that stuff. And there's not much in it. There may be the odd team in the league that have had a bad time financially or having a very good time, but the 90% of clubs are roughly the same. And rock, paper, scissors would be, am I playing a 4-3-3 today? Am I going to play against a 4-4-2? And if they play a 4-4-2, the strengths are here, the weaknesses are there. And you're trying to amplify your strengths and minimise your weaknesses against the opposition. But really what makes a difference is, can I find the shortcut every week to optimising those players, to finding the low-hanging fruit, to create a rhythm in your team where the players want, or the players understand what the outcome needs to be. And I don't necessarily mean we want to score more goals than the opposition, but the outcome of our process should be we create frequency in certain parts of the pitch more than they can create their frequency of opportunities. And that they're the outcomes. This is the framework we're going to choose to work on as a team. And now I've got to find a way as a manager in my Monday to Friday of creating the rhythm and intensity and competitiveness that those players make good choices instinctively during the game with an underlying framework. And, you know, I've heard for years, how do you get the best out of players? And I think I've done it pretty well myself over a long period of time. And how do you get the best out of players? How do you develop players? How do you optimize talent? And this concept of you've got to give people freedom for them to become creative. I can't see it. From my knowledge and my experience of 25 years, can't see that. There's no freedom given for that creativity. It's competitiveness. If players are playing to win, if they have a simple framework, if they're thinking about less things, less is more, and they're playing to win, and you can find competitiveness in every minute they're playing, those instinctive creative choices are made and players play well. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do on a match day with a bit of rock, paper, scissors. And if I've got an owner or a chairman that's intuitive about what he's seeing on the pitch, even if he doesn't understand the process or the technicalities of it, then I feel optimized as a manager. How do you make me a better manager? And I need someone that understands what I'm doing to make me a better manager. Because when I speak to the players in the dressing room, when I make choices, I've got to be me. If I'm me, I've got a hell of a chance of succeeding. If I'm not me and I'm thinking about, if I do this, well, how's that going to be viewed or perceived? It ain't going to work.
Paul, as a result of your MK Dons experience, where you got promotion, but then the following season, you know, it was a challenging start. And as a result of your Bristol Rovers experience, where you were there for 3 months, has it added something to your mix or has it taken something away from you?
Added.
Explain.
I think it's easy to think, oh, that makes me more cold in my decisions. Someone said to me the other day, you'll look at things a lot differently now. You'll look after yourself more. No, I won't. I won't look after myself and live up to that sort of conventional view that you need to be somehow ugly and nasty to succeed in sport, because that's not me. What it has done is it's helped me focus on one or two things more than others. How do I get the biggest output from my energy? And, you know, coming back to that topic of being supported, you're supported with trust and credibility and how you feel as the person that's doing the job, or how you're supported with facilities and finances and everything else. Well, I've been through the spectrum now. I'm not going to tell you how and who and what, but I've had support with trust and feeling like I've got the ability and autonomy to make those decisions, and I've not had necessarily the finance. I've had the finance and not the trust. I've had neither, and I've had both. And give someone both who knows what they're doing over a long enough period of time, you get what Nigel Clough's done this season at Mansfield. You trust someone that knows what they're doing, and you give them appropriate amount of support financially, and they can speak on their experience and they know what they're doing, and you optimize the person in charge, it works.
What did you find when you went into Stevenage? And I suppose, what did you agree with Phil Wallace, the owner, as the sort of primary objectives and maybe the secondary objectives that he wanted you to achieve and you wanted to achieve with him?
The conversations surprised me, to be honest, because the first part of the objective was obvious. Your second, third, bottom of the league. We've got to pull the team out of this situation pretty quickly. But then going forward, there's a lot more optimism and ambitions of an odd word. But let's talk about this conventionally. The ambition to be successful in the league and get promoted, etc. There was a lot more than I thought there was going to be beyond this season. There has to be something when you're going to work, there has to be something long term that you're aspiring to and you're motivated by, not just I've got to go to work. So that was a very positive topic to talk about, which started encouraging me about doing the job. There was that long term objective as well as the obvious short term one.
We're talking to you on a day off, as you say, is in the aftermath of a midweek defeat at Tranmere. That's a plentiful library you've got around you there. Do you spend a day off reading or do you spend a day off catching up? What paint a picture for me of what you do.
I have to be on the move. I can't sit still. So, I mean, I've got a study here with lots of old books. Most of them are for show, I have to say.
You never read them?
Some lovely old books. Not really. No, I don't. I'm aesthetic. When it comes to my study, it's an aesthetic thing. I don't read. I'm too active in my mind. I can never settle to read. I've never been able to read, even though I did English A level and English literature and stuff. I've never been able to read. So I'm always on the move. I've got a furtive imagination and I'm even on a day off when I'm knackered like I am today, it's like having jet lag once a week.
Yeah.
You get in the habit of having jet lag. It's not great, but you get used to it. I can't sit still. I can't sleep during the day. I can't lie in and I can't sit still. And my day off will be active and on the move. And if I'm not running and keeping fit, I'm doing something else.
But do you have to have a period every week that's a non-football zone?
Yeah.
And the longer you're in the game, you understand there is benefit to be had by not thinking of football, watching football matches 24/7.
Yeah, I probably stopped going to watch football matches about 10 years ago. I go to the odd game, one or two a year. There might be a social or take my son, or there has to be a real purpose to it. I've figured out now my own recruitment profiling system, how I recruit players. So I don't need to be out there looking at every single game just in case I see a player. It would benefit sometimes to find a player that way, but for the hours I've got to spend, it's not healthy. And if I want to be in this long term, I've got to find a healthy way of living. I've got to be fit. I've got to be, when I run, it's like therapy. It's like I slip into another zone. So I really enjoy cross-country running now, which I thought I'd never do that, but I do it and I really enjoy it. And it's a therapy. It's however you want to describe that. I love it. There are zones and I come back and I've always lived. I mean, I lived in Bath. I've always been in Bath. I lived in Exeter for 12 years. So I worked in Exeter for 12 years, but lived in Bath. And actually that detachment was very healthy. People think that driving long distance is stressful and tiring. It's the opposite. It's the only place that people can't find me and get me and need a decision from me. And so I'd have an hour and a half driving home and it's bliss. It's bliss being in that car. I can disappear. Emotionally, I can disappear. It's not, I don't mean physically, but I can emotionally disappear for an hour and a half. And I can choose if I answer a phone call or not. And yeah, it's physically tiring, but emotionally very good for me. So you're absolutely right. You have to find other interests and you've got to detach yourself from it, because if you want to be in it long term, you've got to find a way of working your week, delegation, having people around you you trust to be involved knees deep in all the nonsense you get every day at a football club. You need someone an adjunct to you to that nonsense. And I've got my own adjunct to that. If it was the army, it'd be a sergeant major. I've got my own one of those. I call him operations, but you know, it's that filter for me to all the nonsense. He likes the nonsense. I like it. I can deal with it, but I can't emotionally deal with it.
What time do you normally finish on a sort of training day? What time are you normally on the road back home?
Every day is different, but it's not. But you never finish though, Clem.
No, but I was just going to test whether you picked up my calls or not. If you give me a rough indication you're in the car by 2, I'll try you at 2:30 one day and see if you pick up and whether I'm one of the fortunate
ones. It's a very good use of my time. And actually, you probably won't get me because I'll be on the phone. And I'm on the phone constantly. I will go through. So my morning at the moment going to Stevenage is I leave home at 6 to get to Stevenage at 8:30. If you want to call me, you'll have to get in between 7:15 and 7:30 because that's the only slot I've got free. So my first phone call is at 6:10 and I will go through all the way to about 8:20 on the phone. And I'm not filled between 7:15 and 7:30. So that's when you'll have to catch me. I phoned the club secretary this week. I wanted to ask him something. I phoned him at 7:20. He must have thought it was terribly rude. And I had to explain to him, I'm really sorry, but that was the only moment I had in my entire journey that I could call you and leave a message.
You become
very efficient with your time.
Yeah. All the people listening, all the fans who think that football managers just work an hour and a half a day and then go home to walk the dog could not be more mistaken. Paul, that was an absolute insight. We wish you luck for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Clem. Thank you for having me.
The author of The Midnight Library, by the way, that I was referring to is Matt Haig. It's a best-selling, well, would I call it a novel? Yeah, I think I probably could, about how we think if we'd changed one decision in our path, our lives would have been enhanced. But of course, by changing one decision, we change a whole raft of others that follow. Not that I'm trying to spoil the story for you. While we're here, we should send our congratulations to Mansfield Town, whose 8th consecutive league win last weekend was a new club record. They are not in action this coming weekend. There are 11 Sky Bet League 2 fixtures, though. Game of the day, Forest Green, of course, the long-standing leaders, entertaining third-placed Newport County. Tranmere, who are between them in the table as things stand, travel to Barrow. Elsewhere, fourth place Sutton United are at home to Bristol Rovers. Seventh place, eighth as Swindon entertain Exeter City. And Northampton, currently fifth, travel to Walsall. Paul Tisdale, Stevenage are at Crawley. And what a get down and dirty battle there is at the bottom as 23rd place Scunthorpe United entertain 24th placed Oldham Athletic. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Paul Tisdale and to Todd Cantwell. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.